Good morning, everyone. Happy Saturday to you. So glad and honored you're listening to WWL, the Home Improvement Show, the Big 870. This is what we do every Saturday morning between now and 12 o'clock. We get a chance to talk home improvement. And that can include lots of different topics. That can include topics relating to a project you may be doing inside or outside projects, which, you know, probably not doing too much outdoors today because of the gloomy weather. But certainly you may be planning something, or maybe you have a project that's underway and you ran into a snag and say, man, have some questions about what step to do next. Or maybe questions related to what product you should use, or maybe completely different. You say, listen, I have this project, but I really don't have time to do it, or I don't have the skill set to do it. I want to hire a professional. Who would you recommend to do this type project? Maybe adding on to your home. Maybe it's a new house. You have questions related to that. And it could be questions that may be, air conditioning related, or electrical, or painting, or plumbing. Maybe it's energy efficiency, or if it's indoor air quality. It could be a moisture problem. You know, perhaps in this past summer, you were faced with lots of moisture problems in your home, and you don't want to go through that again. You know, winter's here, and things are drying. Moisture is not as big on the forefront of people's minds, but there are some others out there that are planning, saying, listen, I'm going to let it dry naturally over the winter, but I want to be very proactive and prevent this from happening again next spring, next summer. What do I need to do? Well, if that is any of you, give me a call. I would love to talk to you. The number is 504-260-1870, or send me a text at 870-870. We can answer your text. It's always first come, first serve. So I'm going to encourage you, even though we got between now and 12 o'clock, I'm always going to encourage you, call in early, text in early, because it always seems either it's right before the end of the first hour or certainly right before the end of the second hour. A lot of folks start calling to get their questions in, and we don't have enough time to get to everyone. So best thing to do is to call in. Joey, our producer, will certainly get your name, get your question. He'll put it on, put you on hold. As you're on hold, you're going to turn the volume down on your phone. I do that every time. Turn the volume down on your radio. I don't know what I'm thinking this morning. Turn the volume down on your radio, and you can listen to the show live on your phone. I promise you, you're not going to miss anything. You're not going to miss a thing, and we'll get to your questions as quickly as we can. All right, listen, we're going to go to a commercial break. When we come back, we'll start answering your questions. Now's a great time to call in, ask your question live here on the Home Improvement Show, 260-1870. We'll be right back after this. Welcome back to the Home Improvement Show. You have a question for me, please give me a call. Would love to talk to you today. 260-1870. Let's go to phone lines and we can speak with Miss Cleon. Hey, Miss Cleon, Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. Good morning. I have an air-to-air heat pump, and the outside unit is almost directly beneath a window that I cannot get clean. What is the stuff I'm working on? Can you tell me?
What is the stuff you're working on? What do you mean?
I mean, whatever, when a cloud comes off that outside unit, I figure that is what's messing up my window, and what I do to clean all my other windows doesn't work on that window.
Okay, so what comes off your unit is actually moisture. In the wintertime, what happens is because it's an air source heat pump, it takes the heat from the outside temperature, the outside energy, and puts it inside your home. Well, over time, as it's doing that, the outside equipment builds up ice because of the conditions of transferring the refrigerant, and the machine realizes it's building up ice, and what it does is it actually turns in reverse to melt the ice off of the outdoor equipment so it can capture more heat. So as it's running in reverse, it's getting that outside equipment really, really hot, and that ice turns into water vapor, and that's like that cloud you're seeing coming off the top of your machine. So it really shouldn't be any different, Ms. Cleon, than any other window. So I don't think it's a wintertime problem. I'm wondering if it's something else. But
I was wondering if it was some anti-corrosive stuff that they put on that unit that was coming off.
What's it look like on that window? What's it what do you try and clean off? Is it moldy? Is it fungi?
No,
what is it?
The darn thing looks clean until the sun hits it at just such an angle, and then it has a little bit of a sheen with maybe a hit of metallic. That's what I'm thinking, some kind of petroleum product. Yeah.
No. I think it's something different, Ms. Cleon. I don't know why it's just on that one window. What you just described to me sounds like your windows probably have a low E coating, and that low E coating may have broken down, and it looks just like that. It's kind of spotty. It's got some spots, and it's got a little gray, a purple haze to it, and it's kind of oily looking. And yes, ma'am, that's the low E. That's not anything to do with the heat pump.
Okay, thank you so very much. Merry Christmas.
Yes, ma'am. No, Merry Christmas to you. I appreciate the phone call. Hey, if you have a question, go ahead and give us a call. We'd love to hear from you. 260-1870. Our next call today is Nancy. Hey, Nancy, good morning. Merry Christmas.
Good morning. I have a question about independent solar electric systems.
I'm sorry, say that again, Nancy. You're breaking up. You have a question about what?
Independent solar electric systems.
Okay.
What's your opinion on them? I have very low electric use, and I was considering installing that versus a grid system. Is there anybody who does that in this area? I'm not having a lot of luck finding anybody who does an independent off-grid solar electric.
Yeah, no, they are. The reason it's not very popular around here is because of typically the cost of the battery bank. So a lot of folks do a grid tie-in versus off-grid, like what you're interested in. But it's really a different inverter and a battery bank. Everything else is the same. The sizing, the design, the installation is very, very similar. You still go through permitting process and get inspected. So it's just really a different type of inverter. And also you're adding a battery bank to it. So I would suspect that any of the local solar companies will do that for you. Have you gone to SunPro Solar on the North Shore? Have you called them?
I have, and I think they gave me an estimate for a grid system, and then they didn't seem very interested in doing an independent system.
Yeah, that's interesting. Okay. What about
That's why I called, because it just doesn't seem like a thing.
What about South Coast Solar? Because those folks have done them before in our areas. Typically, like I said, most people do with the grid tie-in, but they're capable of doing it off-grid system.
Okay. Well, that's
so
great.
South
that's
Coast
great
Solar,
to know.
Give them a call.
My best luck was Battery World, oddly. They do.
Yeah, you know what? I've actually heard that, but I'm not. They'll sell you the products. I'm not sure if they actually install. Do you know if they install or not, Nancy?
They will work up a system for you. The guy is great. They'll work up a system for you. The guy is really neat. He's all about it. He loves it. That was the most encouraging information I got. I wanted to call you because you like the solar, aspect of energy, and I think it's great. I just don't like the grid tie-in. I don't need the grid tie-in.
I use really small off-grid systems for solar because I use them on my farm. So I use them for the electric hot fence. I got a couple small little independent systems and also for a water well. But they're not really designed they can be. It's just not sized for a house or a larger use. I mean, because if you think about it, the unit that we need for a hot wire fence for the livestock is real small usage. And also for the water well, it's not a big usage either because it's really a low flow system. It's just there for livestock water. It's not necessarily there for high pressure systems like what you use in your house. So like I said, Nancy, the technology is the same. I can't believe that those folks are not wanting to do it. If anything, think they'll be more interested in because the batteries are expensive and it makes a good sale.
Well, it might just be that they think that I don't know what my electric use is, you know. But I, yeah, it might just be I'm a little off. I'm a little off the electric grid as a consumer, so it might be don't understand what my actual usage is. It's very low, so that could be it. Who knows?
Yeah,
I'll call them again. I'll call them again. So thank you so much. It's very encouraging.
Oh, you're very welcome. Hope it works out for you. If not, call me back. We'll figure something out.
Oh no, it's such a why not go off grid if you can't? You know, jeez.
Right. Agreed.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Nancy. Bye-bye. Have a great day. All right. Our next caller this morning is Michael. Hey, Michael. Good morning. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, Paul. Hope you're doing well.
I am doing fantastic. How can I help you today?
All right. I got – I replaced a microwave over my stove that had the pads to soak up the moisture and so forth. And I put in a unit that's going to vent through the attic. And I'm about ready to cut my hole through my sheetrock and go up. But it's a 7-inch vent pipe, so it's big. It's on the hip side of the roof. I don't have but a 4-inch bathroom piece of PVC vent right there, so that's too small.
Yes, sir.
I can run some flexible about 30 feet until I, I'm hoping to get a roof this coming spring. But I think I can run about 30 feet of flexible pipe to get it to where my natural gas hot water heater vents temporarily. But I wanted to ask you a question. Could I do this? I'm only about 6 feet from my soffit, the edge of the house. If I was to run that with PVC in the attic, and kind of sort of do a pee drain or something, run it through the soffit and vent it out the side of the roof. Is that doable?
How are you going to do it with a 7-inch pipe?
Well, it was a Z-Line range hood, and that's what it came with.
No. But how are you going to transfer that? You need to keep that 7-inch all the way through and through the roof jack. So you're not going to be able to transfer down to a small PVC pipe.
Well, I was thinking about getting like some, sewer pipe is 6-inch, go down 1-inch. I can reduce it 1. I think it won't be a problem.
Yeah, going down 1-inch, I don't think would be a big problem. I agree. Yeah.
Right. And then run it through my soffit and then kind of, turn it and put a cage on it so birds or nothing like that will come into it and vent it through there as opposed to cutting a hole in the roof, which may leak at some point.
Michael, do you think you can get a 6-inch PVC pipe through the framing and get it to your soffit? Is that possible?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. Well, then I really don't see a problem with that. However, from a function standpoint, I don't see an issue with that. What I don't know off the top of my head, and I would have to go back and look this up. I don't know if the code is going to allow you to use a PVC pipe for that. I can't think of any reason why they would not. But
I mean, it's just air moving through it. I don't have nothing else,
Yeah, because when you do a downdraft, you're putting PVC in a slab. So I can't really see any reason why they can't. I'm kind of processing out loud, making sure that I'm not giving you any bad advice that would be a code violation. I think it should be fine.
Okay, and for a short run, it shouldn't matter, right? I mean, I don't have to worry about, the longer the run, it's going to lose, power, all that kind of stuff.
No, if you're using just a short few feet like you're talking about going to the south, it should be fine.
Okay, well, I appreciate your time, sir.
Yes, sir, you bet. No, thank you. Good Bye-bye. Call. Merry Christmas to you. Listen, if you have a call, you got a question, man, give us a call now, 260-1870. Or send me a text at 870-870, and we'll get to you as quickly as we can. It's first come, first serve, so I'm always going to encourage you to call in now. And once you get on hold, you can hear the show while you're holding on. You're not going to miss anything. All right, let's look at a text. First text today says, how do you feel about rock wool? Well, you don't tell me in the text where you're planning on using it. I see Rockwool quite often insulating in walls and also ceilings. It was used a lot more in the past than it's currently used. I think as an insulator, it's about the same as any other fibrous products like a fiberglass, as a fibrous conventional insulation. I'm not opposed to it. I like Rockwool as long as it's installed as per the manufacturer's directions. One thing to keep in mind, though, as you are insulating with fibrous conventional insulations, in order for them to properly work, you need to be putting them in a airtight cavity or enclosure. What I mean by that is, let's say, for instance, you're insulating a ceiling, and the attic is above, and your living space is below. In order for any fibrous insulation to work, you need to make sure that all the penetrations in your ceiling and all the penetrations in your top plate framing has got to be airtight in order for it to properly work. And when you get to the outer edges, as the edges intersecting with the roof, you want to make sure that your soffit is not bringing air in and decreasing the R value of that fibrous insulation. That's true for cellulose, fiberglass, or Rockwool. So the installation is crucial to how well it performs. All right, listen, we're going to go to a CBS News break. When we come back, we'll answer more of your questions. Welcome back to the Home Improvement Show. If you have a question, we'd love to talk to you today. That number is 504-260-1870 or send me a text at 870-870. Let's go to the phone lines and speak with Chad. Hey, Chad, good morning. Merry Christmas.
Good morning. Merry Christmas.
How can I help you today?
I have a raised house. I have no insulation. I have subfloor, felt paper, and then hardwood floor throughout my entire house. There's certain spots throughout the house that will just start sweating randomly, and it seems more to be when it's cold. I went into the house, and I can't find any spots that are actually wet.
Okay.
Do you have any suggestions on how to fix it?
Yeah, so it almost sounds like what you're wrestling with, Chad, is condensation, saturation. Let's talk about what allows that to occur. You have moisture in the air and you have cold surfaces. And when you kind of integrate that with maybe it's a heater you're running inside your house that is also adding moisture, it would allow those floors or any cool surface at that point to sweat. Or to reach dew point and condense is probably the more technical term to describe it as.
So, I mean, it's just like random spots. Like sometimes it might be under the bed. Sometimes it could be in the hallway. And that is like what you're talking about.
Yes, sir. Yeah. I'm surprised you're not having issues in the summer. In the summertime, a lot of the raised homes have issues with moisture coming from outside in, meaning that water vapor is driving inward to a cooler, drier interior environment, and the wood floors become saturated in a cup. They aren't a lot of people that have the issues of condensing in the wintertime because typically the outside air is dry enough where it's not a problem. You must have some pretty moist interior conditions during the winter. How are you heating your house? What are you using?
We have a central air. It's gas.
We
have a space heater. No, it's natural gas.
It's natural gas. Okay. All right. A rare occasion I've seen some propane heaters have issues because of the moisture the propane adds. I mean, you're adding some moisture in the air with the natural gas. It's not as extreme with natural gas as it is with a propane fuel. Have you been able to pinpoint or put a pattern to when this occurs under what conditions?
It seems like when it's cold outside.
When it's really cold?
It didn't happen today, but the last big cold front we had, when I had noticed it.
Yes, sir. Yeah, so I think what if you continue to put that pattern, you can help identify what's some of the causes and what allows it to or prevent it from happening. I suspect what you're going to do, Chad, though, in order to prevent this from happening is put in a like a standalone dehumidifier in your house to help remove some of the moisture inside your home in the winter, or maybe put on a fan, like an isolating fan or a ceiling fan running in reverse to help circulate some of the air and get some drying.
So what about insulating floors?
Yeah, that would certainly help a lot if you insulate the floors. Let me give you a resource you can go read online. Go to pulsehouse.com. It's a website, pulsehouse.com. When you're there, look on in the blog section. So at the very top of the banner, you'll see a button for blog. Once you're on the blog section, the right-hand side, you can search. And I want you to search for insulating raised houses. And you'll see that there's a study, a building science study that the LSU Ag Center did shortly after Hurricane Katrina that helps you identify what's the best methods of insulating a raised home.
Okay.
Once right, you've done I'll that, if you have questions about it, just let me know. I'll be happy to help.
Okay. All right. I appreciate it.
Good deal, Jed. Thank you so much. Have a great day. All right, listen, we're going to go to a commercial break. When we'll come back, we'll get to answering more of your questions. If you're on hold, like Ron, hold on. We'll come into you next. We'll be right back after this. Welcome back to the Home Improvement Show. Let's go to the phone lines and speak with Ron. Hey, Ron, good morning. Merry Christmas.
Good morning. Merry Christmas to you as well. My question today is in reference to tankless hot water heater.
Yes, sir.
I have two of them. One is 5 gallons per minute. The other is seven gallons. And my larger unit, I've started having problems with it, I guess, maybe 2-3 weeks ago.
Okay.
And it stopped putting out hot water. Then it would put it out, but then it would turn back cold and I guess it doesn't stop working completely, so I'm trying to find out what route to take prior to just replacing it, some type of troubleshooting that I could do to see what's going on.
Yeah, so, Ron, how old is that water heater?
We installed it brand new when I built my house, about 10, 11 years.
Okay, what kind of maintenance have you done to it? Have you flushed it out and done...
Okay. Well, I didn't know that there were maintenance required, so I haven't done anything to it.
Okay, yes, sir. So tankless water heaters do require some maintenance. It almost sounds like a modulating valve maybe going out on that 7 gallon per minute unit, because if it lights and then turns off and then lights and turns off and it's intermittent working, it may be a modulating valve, or maybe that the valve itself just needs to be cleaned and adjusted. A lot of folks don't realize these tankless water heaters aren't, even traditional tanked water heaters, they require maintenance. But the tankless water heaters actually require more maintenance than the tanked units. Where are you calling from? What part of the world?
Donaldsonville, Louisiana.
Okay. Uh-huh. So I think I would... you can contact Burkhart Heating and Air, and they service tankless water heaters, and they'll be happy to come and service it, clean it, get it up and running for you.
You have a spelling for that?
Yeah, so if you go to paulshouse.com, in fact, I'm going to go there with you because I don't necessarily have Burkhart's contact information under water heater. It's actually going to be under heating and cooling, but if you think about it, the technology of a gas tankless water heater is the same technology as a heating furnace, heating furnace. So if you go to pulsehouse.com and under your region, you would select South Shore because you're in Donaldsonville, and under the professional trade type of service, you would select heating and cooling. And then at the very top, you would see Burkhart Air and Heat. It's Burkhardt, Burkhart. And you can give them a call, and they'll be happy to come help you out.
Okay, that's Burkhardt.
Oh,
D-T. Okay.
T. Okay. D-T. as in Paul? No, David Thomas.
Oh, T. Okay, I got you. Yeah, man. And the other thing, when I could tell when it was going to start heating, it made like a grunting noise. We could hear it, you know, clean through the ceiling.
Yeah, so you'd actually hear it ignite, almost like a propane, when you're lighting a propane, like a crab pot, something like that?
Grunting, like, you know, something like that. And I knew then that it was heating.
Okay.
But when it wasn't kicking on, then you would hear nothing.
Gotcha.
Anytime it appears to want to try to begin working, it makes that grunting noise.
Right. Right. Well, listen, give the folks at Burkhart a call. They'll be happy to help you run and get you back up and running where that unit's serviceable again.
That company is located where, you know?
They're actually on the North Shore. They're in Bentonville, but they service both sides of the lake.
Okay. That's a distance from me then.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Give them a call. I certainly appreciate it, Paul. My last call to you was about windows, and you helped me out pretty good with that.
Good deal. Perfect. Well, I'm glad things worked out for you. Thank you for calling. Merry Christmas to you.
Y'all the same. All right. God bless.
God bless to you. All right. Folks, we got a spot for you on the phone. You got a question, give us a call. 504-260-1870 or send me a text at 87087. We're going to go to a commercial break. When we come back, we'll continue answering your questions here on the Home Improvement Show, the Big 870. Welcome back to the Home Improvement Show. If you have a question, now is a great time. Right before the news break is always the best time to get on hold and ask your question first thing coming out of this news break. That number is 504-260-1870, 260-1870. Or, of course, you can always send me a text at 87087. Speaking of text, let me take a look at a few of them right before this news break. All right, our next text says, how hard is it to replace a water cutoff valve that is on the outside of my house? Been leaking water, cost me lots of money. Well, change a cutoff valve. All right, so typically not that difficult. It just depends. Is it in PVC pipe connecting the copper, or is both the inlet and the outlet copper, or both the inlet and the outlet PVC? Or like a PEX piping, this depends. I'm suspecting that your bottom half may be PVC and the top half is copper. That's how some of them are, or both of them, both inlet and outlet is copper. And if you have a torch, like an acetylene type torch or a MAP gas torch, you can remove that cutoff valve and you can sweat in a new one. It's not that difficult. However, if you've never sweated pipe before, then it is going to be difficult. You need to have a certain amount of tools. Something else you may want to consider, too, is because of getting that valve out and a new one in, and it may be a different length, you may choose to put in a union to make it easier to remove and replace. That would allow you to make things up on your bench and then put in a union and screw them in at the top and bottom to make things work easier for you. Plus, if you had to replace in the future, you can always do that by unscrewing the union, pull it out, and put the new one in. All right, quick answer. Hope that helped you. We'll be back to the Home Improvement Show right after this brief break. Welcome to the second hour of the Home Improvement Show here on the Big 870. If you have a question, give us a call at 260-1870 or send me a text at 87087. Let me get to a couple of those texts because y'all sent a few of them to me while we're at the news break. All right, first text, the second hour Home Improvement Show says, what is the average years and cost recovery for foam insulation versus traditional in terms of savings? So your question doesn't say if this is a new construction or if this is a retrofit. I have done these cost analysis and return on investment for new construction, done a bunch over the years. So let me, and I have those numbers, you know, pretty much on the top of my head. So let me discuss this and answer your question as if it's a new construction home. You can these principles or these numbers rather are not linear to existing houses, but they're somewhat representative of a retrofit existing house. But like I said, they're not linear. But let me discuss them for new construction. So when I built my home 16 years ago, I did this return investment cost analysis, and you got to decide what's your starting point, because when you're comparing it to it, you got to say, okay, well, am I comparing it to the bottom of the line insulation or an average insulation or the top of the line insulation, meaning conventional insulations. So what I did with my particular home is I used the building code as my benchmark. So at the time, the building code says, hey, you have to do an R13 in the walls or R30 in the ceiling. So I took those dollars, those cost numbers, and I applied it and compared it and contrasted it to a foam insulation product. And the other part of this is when you use foam insulation at the roof line, you also are able to decrease the size of your air conditioning system. So when you're looking at return on investment, you're also looking at smaller air conditioning equipment, smaller ductwork. So you need to take all that into account. So in very general terms, there's a premium cost to go to foam insulation compared to conventional insulation. And also there is a cost savings on the equipment size and also on the duct size for a unvented semi-conditioned attic assembly, a foam insulated at roof line. So all that being said is the payback for the incremental cost of going from one system, which is conventional insulation, conventional air conditioning system in a vented attic, compared to foam insulation in a semi-conditioned where your air conditioning equipment is in a semi-conditioned space at that roofline insulation, my payback was around 3.5 years. So that being said, any energy efficiency improvement you're considering to your home, if it's a 3 to 5 year payback, that's something you definitely want to do. If it's a 5 to 7 year payback, you probably have to look at it a little bit more carefully and figure out, okay, well, why do I want to make this choice? If that energy efficiency improvement has a 10-year payback, then you really need to question why you're doing it. A lot of people do energy efficiency improvements for a lot of different reasons. So it really, you just have to analyze, why am I doing it and do I really want to do this or not? Now, what my analysis did not take into account is the escalating cost of electricity or fuel. So you can build that into the models. However, I really have no basis or good true reference of how much electricity cost increases and how often it increases. So I left that out of my equation. So in about 3.5 years was my payback from a traditionally insulated house to a foam insulated house. Now, that was new construction. That was a single-story home. That was an average, 2,000 square foot home with a decent roof pitch. If once you're starting getting beyond that average, type scenario where you got big, huge force pitches for your roof, and you got multi stories, and lots of offsets, obviously your costs also increase. So, it's not linear. It just gives you a benchmark of what we're talking about. All right. So hopefully that answers your question. Long explanation to your question, but hopefully it worked for you. Okay. So we're going to go to a commercial break. When we come back, we'll answer some more of your questions. I see a couple of folks are on hold. Keep those texts coming at 870-870. And if you have a question, give us a call, 260-1870. We'll be right back after this. Welcome back to the Home Improvement Show. Let's go straight to the phone lines, and we're going to speak with Sean. Hey, Sean, good morning. Merry Christmas.
Hey, good morning. How you doing, Paul?
Just fine. How about you?
I'm doing good, thanks. Hey, listen, I was just wondering, I live in Covington, and I've got I busted up a slab, and I wondered if you know of a location on the North Shore that accepts broken concrete for recycling.
Ooh, you know what? That is a great question. I'm not sure if Strainco on Highway 59 does concrete or not. I know they do a lot of recycling and a lot of waste management. I just don't know if they
don't.
Do concrete.
They don't. I call them. They're going to charge you to dump it.
Okay. I know there's a company on the South Shore. It's Pontchartrain Materials Corporation. I'm sorry, they're not in South Shore. They're in Slidell. They do it. And I've heard of another one in Robert. I'm trying to think of the name of that one, and they do it too. But that may be just as far as a drive as Slidell.
Yeah,
I'm sorry. I don't have anybody for you. I apologize.
No.
Strainco can tell you who else they can recommend, or?
No, I asked him, and he said, no, we'll charge you, and I'm not going to tell you where to go to not charge you.
So, oh, that's nice of him. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so here's my next idea. Call some of the ready-mix companies, like a Parish Concrete or Lafarge, and ask them, because they got to get rid of concrete all the time, too. So you may want to ask.
Yeah, I did that. I did that too, but they're closed today. So.
Yeah, they're gonna be closed today.
All right, Paul. Well, listen. Thank you very much.
Sorry, I can help you out more. Thank you.
That's okay. Thanks, man.
All right, let's go to the next caller and speak with Leon. Hey, Leon. Good morning. Welcome to the show.
Yeah. Good morning, Paul. Merry Christmas to you.
Merry Christmas to you.
Look, my water tank. It's pulsating, and the guy that does drilling water pumps and stuff,
yep,
said put an air valve on your tank where your little copper pipe hooks up to it.
Yes, sir.
And I done that. All right, buddy. Thank you. And it worked the first time, but it's pulsating again. So I went back there and I shut the electricity off and I drained the tank. And the tank drained in like 2 seconds. Okay. And then I turned it back on and I had full water control. But I still got the pulsating in the tank.
Leon, does your tank have a bladder in it?
I'm not sure if it's got a bladder or not, because when I bought the tank, it had one of them bladders on you know, that screws into the tank, and the copper line runs from there to the pump, which they told me at the hardware store at Ace that that's what puts your air in the tank.
Okay. It could be one of two things that you're describing to me. Is it, you know, almost sounds like maybe you have a ruptured bladder inside the tank, or if you lost a prime in your pump. Because if you're getting water but it's still pulsating, you know, that may be a prime issue, and not necessarily a tank issue.
Right. I never thought about that, because I've lost prime a couple of times and had to reprime it. I've tried that and see if that stops the pulsating.
I think that's where I would go to next, Leon.
Okay, thank you, Paul. I appreciate it.
Hey, you got a pickup valve, you got a pipe that goes down into your well for keeping that pump primed up. I wonder if that pickup valve is having some issues, and maybe that's why you're losing prime. You may want to investigate that too.
Okay, I appreciate that, okay. Paul. Yeah,
yes, sir. You bet.
Happy New Year's.
Yes, sir.
Merry
Christmas to you as well.
Okay.
Thank you for calling. Good phone call.
Thank you.
All right, let's go to Miss Suzanne. Hey, Suzanne, good morning. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thank you so much. Merry Christmas to you. I am wondering if you know somebody we could call to fix an in-the-floor furnace.
This is a gas furnace, a gas heater?
Yes.
Okay. Do you have a company, Suzanne, you're working with to service your air conditioning equipment?
Probably not.
Probably
sorry,
not.
This isn't my house.
Okay. All right. So this is, do you have access to a computer?
Yes.
Okay. So it could be a computer or a smartphone or a tablet. It doesn't matter. Go to paulshouse.com.
Yes.
That's paulshouse.com.
Yes.
And while you're there, go ahead and put in your region, whether it's, you know, North Shore, South Shore, you know, Mississippi Gulf Coast. And then for the type of service, put in heating and cooling, select heating and cooling in that drop-down menu, and you will see the folks I recommend to come do that. And any one of these folks can service or repair a floor furnace.
Okay, because I did talk to somebody who did heating and cooling, but he didn't know about that, and he said I needed a plumber for that. So I guess he just wasn't.
Now, the only reason I think you would need a I don't know why you would need a plumber. I mean, some of the HVAC dealers have a gas piping license. That would be the only reason maybe that person didn't have that license, and you would need a plumber for that. For the gas piping, but you know, I don't know if that's the issue or not. So you probably want to look into it a little bit further.
Okay, thank you so much.
Okay, good luck with that. Hope it works out for you.
Thank you, Bob.
Thank you. All right, our next caller today is Vernon. Hey, Vernon. Good morning. Welcome to the show.
Hey, so I'm looking at buying a house, and I brought in a mold inspector of my own, and the mold inspector said that the air, you know, has mold. It's in the sheetrock near a fireplace. And so he stuck a tube up in there and tested it, and he sent it to the lab, and it came back pretty high. I guess on a scale 1 to 3, it was a 3. And then the seller brings in a mold guy of his own, cuts out a portion of the sheetrock, and just visually says, well, there's no mold on here, even though the other my guy said there was. And so I just I've never experienced this before, and as a buyer, as a first-time home buyer, I don't know really what I should do. Do you have any advice?
So, Vernon, just to make sure that I'm clear, you hired someone to come in, and they took a sample. Either did they take an air sample or a swab? Or how did they find out you had mold behind the sheetrock near the fireplace?
Yeah, they there was a little hole in the fireplace near where we suspected the mold to be, and so he first stuck a moisture meter underneath the baseboard, I guess, and got a high reading of about 30 or something. And then he took a tube, like I guess a tube, and got an air sample from kind of behind the wall and then sent it to the lab, and then it came back high.
But the seller their mold guy took a piece of sheetrock off and just did a visual inspection? Is that what you're saying?
I believe so, yeah. Well, it's a brand new sheet. It's brand new sheetrock, though. That's the thing. And then he said that mold only takes 24 hours to grow on there, even though this house is from like 1972. So I don't know exactly what the seller's guy did, but I think I'm pretty sure he just maybe did a visual inspection.
Okay. So there are times when you can do a visual inspection and say you have organic growth, because there's so much organic growth you can look at and say, yeah, that's mold. But when you do a air sample or you do a tape or like a surface sample and you send it to a laboratory, it's pretty obvious that you have mold. I mean, you have proof, you have laboratory documentation saying it is. So, I think you need to go back to the buyer and say, listen, I hired my guy and here it is. You know, what are you going to do about it? Particularly,
well, I'm the buyer. I'm sorry. He's the seller. I'm sorry. As the buyer, if he wants to use his guy for remediation, and my mold guy, I trust him more than I do his, because they're house flippers and they're just trying to make as much money as they can. If he does do the remediation, how do you think I should have my mold guy come back and just verify that everything looks good?
Yeah,
just before
absolutely.
He puts the sheetrock back on, or?
So Vernon, we're getting ready to go to a news break. I want to hold you over so that I can answer this question completely, because this is something that every house buyer is going to need to hear in reference to how to protect yourselves and get a clearance certificate to make sure things are done just so. So,
all right, thank you.
At this point, I think you need to go by with your expert saying, okay, there's moisture. He measured moisture. So if there's moisture, there's a moisture source, whether there's a roof leak or through the brick or through the slab, you got to get that solved first. Because if they just replace sheetrock and it will solve the moisture, you're going to have an organic growth problem. So you need to talk to the seller about the moisture problem and getting it solved. The other part of this, too, is remediating the mold. And that's the part we'll talk about after this news break is of, you know, who can do it, who can't do it, and then how do you test it to make sure it's safe for you and your family to move into it. So, you know, when we get back to this news break, we'll talk about that and break that down a little bit more. And then we're really going to look at it and make sure that the right steps are being done. You're protected, and also the seller's protected too, because they don't want this to come back and bite them either. We'll be right back after this and talk about it. Great. Welcome back to the Home Improvement Show. Right before the news break, we were talking to Vernon, who is first-time home buyer, had someone come in to the house, do an inspection. They found some mold. Sellers are saying, no, I had my guy do it. It's not mold. You know, what do we do? So, Vernon, let me just recap. First of all, if your inspector found that section around that fireplace had elevated moisture, you got to get that solved. You got to identify what's the source of the moisture, and you got to get it resolved. And then that whole section, that assembly has got to be dried. The organic growth has got to be remediated. I think it's easy to debate, do you have it or not? Just because there's new sheetrock there, you know, doesn't mean anything. Mold can grow in a very short period of time under the right conditions. So I think you need to hold if you're the buyer, you need to hold the seller, you know, feet to the fire to get this resolved. Both the moisture and the mold has been remediated. Now, how do you know it was done properly? Well, you can get your tester to write the protocol that needs to be followed, and you can pay that person to come back and verify while it's being done that it's being followed and it's being done correctly. And then also they can, at the very end, they'll come back and do another test and give you a clearance certificate saying, okay, the house is clean and safe to live in. Until you get that clearance certificate, you know, obviously you don't want to go forward with the sale of the house, or certainly you don't want to move in for it. Something else too, Vernon, that I, if I was you, I would look at that house real carefully from top to bottom, from front to back, inside and out, and make sure that nothing else is being concealed. Because as a person who does forensic investigations on building failures all the time, mostly dealing with moisture and also with comfort problems and air quality problems, I see that that there are some folks that try and conceal some problems. They may not be doing it purposely. They may not know it's an issue, and they try and conceal it because they think it's an aesthetic issue, where in reality, although it's definitely aesthetic, it's also a moisture problem. And bad things come when you just conceal the moisture. You don't get the moisture resolved. So, Vernon, I'm hoping that you take that advice and you go through this house very carefully to make sure things are done just so. So that when you move in, that it's safe and it's comfortable and it's reasonable cost to pay your utilities every month to heat and cool the house.
Absolutely. No, that's very good advice, and I appreciate that. Can I ask one other question?
Sure, absolutely.
So if they found that one of the supporting beams has the mold in it, you know, obviously you can't pull that out. And, you know, on the wall, can they treat that wood, like, and get that mold out of there?
Yeah, absolutely. Typically, I would go back to your expert that's already tested the mold and have them write a protocol on how to remediate it. But yes, it can be done. There's a number of different ways they can do it.
If the buyer's mold guy is not, I mean, the seller's mold guy is not in agreement with my mold guy, though, ultimately the buyer, the seller's mold guy can override what my mold guy as the buyer had recommended and just go that way. And I think that's what they're going to do, because for one thing, he had recommended that they do containment, but the seller's mold guy said, we don't need to do containment. I'm just going to treat the whole house. I'm going to HVAC the walls or something, ionize or whatever he said. And then your mold guy can come back and test again. I don't know.
Okay. So now, of course, Vernon, I'm only hearing one side of the story. I'm hearing what you're telling me. And I know you're listening and repeating what they're saying, but there's more to this puzzle than what you're describing to me. And what you're describing to me right now isn't right. If you just take a HEPA vacuum and you vacuum the surface and you put an ionizer in the house, it's not going to be where you need to be. If you have mold on wood, you have mold on sheetrock, and it's accessible, you want to remediate it. You know, you're you can't just rely on ionizer to remediate and kill the mold. That's not going to work. Those type products are typically used for areas of the house that are inaccessible. But if you have, like this beam or around the fireplace that are accessible, your best line of defense is to remediate the mold more with an aggressive type method. It could be an ice blast. It could be a soda blast. It could be sanding. And then you could encapsulate it. You could encapsulate it in a coating. And I'm not a mold expert, remediation expert. My expertise deals with moisture and what allows mold to occur or granite growth to occur. So that's my expertise. I don't test it. I don't remediate it. I don't write standards to do it. I just read lots of protocol for other experts who do that type of work, and I see what they recommend in order to remediate mold. If you're relying completely on a vacuum, a HEPA vacuum, and a ionizer, you're playing with fire. That's not going to work.
Okay. All right. Great. And you said that was a clearance certificate, correct?
Yes. You need a clearance certificate. You want your guy to give you a clearance certificate, not theirs.
Okay. All right. Well, that really helps. Thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it.
You bet. Good luck with that. Hope things work out for you and the seller comes to terms and realizes that they got to take more proactive action than what they're, at least what it sounds like they're saying. All right. We're going to go to a commercial break. When we come back, we'll talk with Sam next. Sam, hold on. Don't hang up. You got a question, give us a call, 260-1870. We'll be right back after this. Love when I jump the gun. Welcome back to the Home Improvement Show. Let's go straight to phone lines and speak with Sam. Hey, Sam, good morning. Merry Christmas.
Hey, Paul, how you doing? I appreciate all the detail you went through with that gentleman there. And I've learned a lot about the mold situation with you and the normie people also as well. It's not the mold,
yes,
it's what's causing it. And even if it's remediated properly, if you don't solve what's causing the mold will come back. And also, just
right,
my opinion, and trying to sell my place, I got got held up without a gun by my real estate agent. She was in cahoots with the buyer. But anyway, still unsold. But anyway, my opinion simply, and maybe you could go into this on a different show, people that do the house flipping thing, they're going to do the minimum monetary repairs because they're trying to make a profit off the place. Even if they're not trying to rip you off, they're going to put bare minimum into all repairs and renovation. And again, my very limited opinion, you might have 20 people that'll tell you I'm full of it, but if the gentleman's looking for a home for his family, maybe try to buy another family's home that's selling and getting out of it. Because whatever repairs,
sure,
were done there were done by people that are living in the place. But anyway, my question is, I feel embarrassed to ask the paint question because I've had a paintbrush in my hand since I've been 10 years old. My grandmother taught me all that. But I have stripped down some cabinets, sanded them down and so forth, and toward painting them. I like the varnish look, but, you know, I think I'm the only one that likes the varnish look on a house that's not older than 80 years old. So therefore, since I'm trying to sell, I'm painting my cabinets. We stripped them down pretty good to bare wood, and I'm using the Kills too that I've used forever since it first came out. Hence the name Kills, stain blocker. It kills stains bleed through. Two coats of Kills later, again, like 90% to bare wood, getting rid of all the varnish, I'm still seeing some bleed through. Is there a better primer to use in that situation? Because obviously Kills is watered down now. It's not the same Kills. I've used it like for 30 years. Two coats, you still see wood grain coming through. It's ridiculous.
What type of wood is it, Sam?
Oh, gee whiz. I imagine something oak-looking, but I can't believe you're going to have oak cabinets and a brick house dating back from 1965. You know, so a tight,
okay,
green, it looks beautiful. If I was keeping it, I would restain it, you know. But, again, I'm trying to sell it, and everybody likes the painted cabinet look anymore.
Okay. I'm wondering, and this is a long shot, but I'm wondering if it's cypress. Because typically with Kills, too, it will not work on top of cypress.
No, it's not cypress. It's a hardwood.
Shore Sawmill. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. With plenty of cypress at my grandmother's house. That was my 20-year training, my apprenticeship.
Yeah, boy.
You know, I know cypress three blocks away. You know, but no, it's some kind of hardwood like a fir, or maybe like a pine. I don't know.
Hard pine. Yeah.
You know, like older pine, it actually doesn't warp on you. And I'm just trying to find a better primer, you know, because I don't want to put three coats of top coat on it, you know.
Absolutely. So I think at this point I would go to your painting supply house and get an epoxy primer and just be done with it. Coat it with an epoxy primer and just be done with it and move forward with your top coat.
Okay. So that means the paint store, so you know where.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
That should be your best bet. Because, look at all the time and labor you spent, you know, painting and stripping and redoing it. And, you know, you're killing yourself on time. Go with the more expensive, better product and be done with it.
And like I said, I've used this stuff for 30 years, and I'm really, really disillusioned with what they've done with it. Also, I have a plumbing question, or I could call it in next week. Are you tight for time?
Yeah, we're tight on time on this one, Sam. So I'm going to ask you either to email it to me during the week, and I'll try and get to it as quickly as I can, or you can call in next Saturday. I'll be happy to help you then.
Okay, then. And what's the email again, paulshouse.com?
You can go there and send me an email, or you can go directly to my email. It's paul@lagrangeconsulting.com.
Gotcha. I'll try to get that into you and everything.
Okay. Perfect.
Okay. All right, Sounds Paul. Great. Thank you.
Thank
and
you,
thanks
Sam.
For helping the gentleman with the mold thing. It's not the mold. If you kill all the mold 100%, if you don't solve what's causing the mold, it's going to come back eventually.
Yeah, exactly. You know? It's all about the moisture.
It's not my knowledge.
There's
it's your
no
knowledge. And like I said, those guys with Normie, they're very, very knowledgeable about it.
Yes, they are. Absolutely. Normie's a great organization.
From all you all. You know, you got to eliminate what's causing the mold, not the mold itself.
Exactly. That's great advice. Appreciate that, Sam. Merry Christmas to you. All right, folks, we're going to go to a quick break. When we come back, we'll wrap the show up here on the Big 87. We'll be right back after this. Welcome back to the Home Improvement Show. Man, this is the last segment of the show. We're going to wrap things up. There were a lot of callers that called in and also folks that texted in that I couldn't get to your call or your text. I'm going to ask you to please do a couple different things. You can actually go to Paul's House Facebook site. You can post your questions at the Facebook site at Paul's House, or you can email me directly at paul@lagrangeconsulting.com. I'm not always in the office, so I can't always get the email, but, you know, send it to me. I will get to them. I promise. It just may take me a few days to respond. Or you can always tune in and call next Saturday at 10 o'clock, next Saturday morning at 10 a.m. We'll be back on the air between 10 and 12. A lot more of the Home Improvement Show next Saturday here in the Big 870. I apologize we didn't get to everybody. It just these 2 hours just like accelerate. I mean, every Saturday, it always goes by really, really fast. So, listen, call back next Saturday or send me an email. Go to Paul's House Facebook site. Some way, somehow, give me a question. I want to help. I enjoy spending my Saturday mornings with y'all. It's always a pleasure. So, God bless. Go help somebody today. You know, go help your neighbor. Give your mom a call. Give your dad a call. Give your siblings a call. Wish them a Merry Christmas and have that connection with your family and your friends and your neighbors. That's what I love about our New Orleans community. So keep it up.